This is A View from the Bridge, unofficial podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 12th of November, 2013, and my name is Patrick Smith. How's it going, guys? Welcome back to another great show. We've got Tom Darnell on this week's show talking about refereeing. We've got Gary Jackson talking about his opinions of Paul Eddy. And we have Neil the Coach Russell and David Bajimsey talking about last week's games and all sorts of topics in between. If you want to get in contact with us here, it's podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com. On Twitter at AVFTB. And the website is www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. It's over a month before the Belfast Giants return to the Odyssey Arena. It's a very, very long road trip, so there's going to be plenty to talk about over the next couple of weeks. First of all, Davey Bajimsey, how are you doing, mate?
How are you, Paddy?
Back on your feet again this week, I hear?
Yeah, threw the crutches away. Was getting bored with it.
Bionic man. And also, Neil, the Coach Russell. No commentary this week, mate. You must be feeling left out.
Withdrawal symptoms, Paddy, withdrawal symptoms.
You can let it all out today.
That's it, mate.
Well, as I say, very, very long road trip ahead of us. It's going to be a real test for the Belfast Giants. It started in the most versatile arena in Hull on Saturday night with a 2-0 win. A pretty dominant performance by the Belfast Giants. They appeared to have put 61 shots on Ben Bounds, who, that's a fantastic result for him when he's conceding two. But, Davey, Hull, these cross-conference games, we've talked about them last season, and it hasn't wavered the fact that we need to go to places like Hull, Fife, Edinburgh, Dundee, and take the points, and the Giants were pretty ruthless.
Yeah, very professional win. This was one of these games, potential banana skin, and one of those games that you must win. And I suppose a bit like Christmas Eve, where you've got the big game perceived against Sheffield, you know, your conference game the following night, and we had to go into Hull there and do a job, and by Jove, we done a job.
Coach, goals from Whitecotton, Shields and Brookwell. Goals from Whitecotton and Elfring. Sorry, with assists going to Shields, Whitecotton, and two for Brookwell. I don't know if you've seen the highlights, but you know, say Hull don't have a bad squad. They went into Cardiff the next night and took the win. So it's a real reflection on how good the momentum of the Belfast Giants is to go in there and do that sort of professional job.
Said it before, I've said it a million times, Paddy. You know, this team, I believe, are a team full of character and a team that seems to really come alive as well on the road. And, you know, we've got the hashtag on Twitter over the last couple of years, Road Warriors, and I think it's a very apt title for the guys, because in those types of barns, and I know we'll go on to talk about it, the likes of Fife and Dundee and Hull, these are, as Davey says, banana skin type games. And Belfast, touch and wood, you know, have done very well, generally speaking, over the last few years against those teams and generally on the road. And, you know, Davey's right, it's a tough place to go into. And one thing that I did hear, which disappointed me, and I suppose maybe from a Hull perspective, worries them, you know, I believe the crowd was quite a poor crowd for an Elite League game.
I think maybe that's a reflection on the team and the team's performance. It's okay, they haven't been spectacular. And with the incident with Derek Campbell leaving them short on imports, it could have had a reflection. But yeah, it's not a massive rink to begin with, and for them to be so short in the stands, maybe not great going forward. But if Fife start to put in good performances like they did against the Cardiff Devils, then you'd like to think that those fans will return, because they're, you know, there's,
would that be Hull?
Sorry. You'd like to think that.
Stop eating your dinner, Paddy.
I am half eating my dinner. But you'd like to think that those fans will return to Hull, because you know, it is a hockey town. It is a town where we've got two former Hull players, guys who grew up playing in that rink, playing for ourselves. You know, it is a team with a bit of history behind it.
Absolutely, and it's a difficult place to go. And like we talked about it on last week's podcast, talking about you know, the threats that they have, and especially the likes of Tendler and Doucette. You know, those guys have been prolific. Tendler, especially, his points production so far this season has been absolutely scary. And you know, especially on the power play, and that was something I thought, generally speaking, the Giants did very well last Saturday, was keeping their discipline. And that's what you've got to do on the road as well, try and stay out of the penalty box as much as possible, because you know yourself, the last thing you want to do is give up a lot of power plays, especially on the road. And you know, the Giants have got a tough travel schedule. They're up first thing in the morning. Sometimes, you know, a lot of other teams talk about bus legs and all the rest. Well, the Giants have that in abundance with the amount of travel they've got to put in. And the last thing you want to do is be playing shorthanded throughout the course of the game. And I thought that's something that the Giants did very well over the course of the game was staying out of the box.
And it's a lovely vegetable curry I'm having, by the way. Davey, what did you think of the game? Did you enjoy it on the webcast?
I've got to be honest, Paddy. I know you're setting one up here, like, but that's twice now I've had the whole webcast. Twice it's failed. To be fair, after a couple of narky emails, twice I've had a refund, you know, but bit disappointing when you sit down to watch a game and it's coughing up errors for you. But one of those
your
things.
Your broadband's not good there, mate.
What's up?
Your broadband speed's not great, apparently.
No, Richard Branson says it's up there, you know, with the best of them, but I don't believe him. Hull say it's down to me. Richard Branson says it's down to them, but sure, who knows? But I've seen the highlights now, and, you know, two great goals from the guys. Obviously, a great performance from Barnes and Nets. Shields getting a very good assist on the white cotton again, keeping his streak going, and Elfring's goal straight off the training session. I watched them training a few videos Sparky had put up last week, and Elfring, one play that he was working on in practice, he comes up with in the game, he skates it from his own D zone, mm-hmm. he takes the fake slap shot and freezes the D man and just skates by him, gets himself an open lane and just roofs it. Absolutely fantastic play from him. But you know, hopefully the next time we're in Hull, I'll be able to watch the game.
That's something that I've noticed big time this season. We talk about Robbie Sandrock's slap shot, which we again saw in the Sheffield game on the Sunday evening. But I tell you, boys, Calvin Elfring has got as good a shot, if not even slightly harder than Sandrock. And whenever he gets a bit of space and gets that opportunity to let rip with that slap shot, I tell you, there's not too many goaltenders get the glove on it.
On this issue with the webcast, now you're involved with the Giants Live TV, coach, and you see the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to be able to produce what we all see, and it's a fantastic production that the guys do have. How important do you think it is now that these webcasts are being produced by the teams? Because we know that Hull, okay, there's Davey's got a refund, but some people did see it, some people didn't see it. You know, it has its problems. Cardiff have started to do their own now regularly. Edinburgh had one this week for the Nottingham Panthers. We have our one, but Sheffield and Nottingham don't have them. How important do you think it is that these teams maybe get on board with this idea?
Well, I'm obviously a big fan of it, so I am. And I think from our perspective, being over here in Belfast, it's important because not everyone can... we have to travel over there, so we do whenever we want to go and watch away games, but a lot of fans do tune in to Giants Live, you know, from Sheffield, from Nottingham, from Coventry, from all over the league, because they maybe don't want to pay a £110 flight and accommodation for a doubleheader or whatever it may well be. And the production, you're quite right. You know, I've said a few times on the podcast, I have seen firsthand the production that goes into producing the Giants Live webcast. And I tell you, you know, that's why I know Hitchie was slightly bantering with us on Twitter the other night. But, like, you know, I would defend the likes of Giants Live to the absolute hilt because the work that goes in, those guys are sometimes not leaving the Odyssey. Dave Laurie and Neil Whiteside, all those boys, they're not leaving the... I'm leaving the Odyssey to sometime 2 o'clock in the morning, getting the highlights package out and all the rest. And, you know, I think it's an indictment on the likes of Sheffield and Nottingham, two clubs who profess to being, you know, two of the biggest clubs in British ice hockey, that they don't, you know, how difficult would it be for them to put on this, you know, say for like a Belfast or a Fife or whatever, to stick, you know, teams whose fans would have to travel a long, long distance to actually follow their team. How difficult would it be for them to stick up a webcast? You know, I find it bemusing that they don't do it. I really do.
Davey, the Nottingham, we had the interview that Cat Swissers did with Gary Moran, and it was brought up in that, and he says, you know, I think they're looking at bums on seats and don't want to put up a webcast because it might restrict the amount of people that come, and they won't have the bums on seats, so people would stay at home and watch it. Personally, I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what the webcast can bring, because obviously that their product is going to bring fans into the rink, whereas the webcast is actually to bring in revenue and bring to the white, to people that can't make it, the guy, like people in Scotland, like ourselves in Belfast, like, you know, that sort of thing. But do you feel that there is that misunderstanding, or do you go along the lines of Gary Moran and think, you know, it's right, it is going to restrict?
It would be interesting now that Giants Live has been running, I'm sure, easily 5 years, to see whether what Todd Kelman would say around the subject of, does he think it's effective bums on seats, or does he see it as a good product that goes hand in hand with the game night production? You know, like every team, Panthers, Steelers included, have cameras at the games. It's part of Elite League rules. You have to hand a game tape to the referee and the away team after every game. As soon as the game's finished, there's a tape for the ref, there's a tape for the away team. That has to be done. So the games are taped. So how hard is it just to do that wee bit of production and get it out over the internet? You know,
I would say it is reasonably difficult from the point of view, from what I have seen, the level of work that actually goes into it. You know, there's six or seven guys working full time behind the scenes, making sure that what you're watching on your laptop or iPad at home is of good quality, and they're there to fix problems that are ongoing or whatever it may well be. So I wouldn't be flippant about it and say it's easy to do. There's a lot more to it, I would imagine, and from what I've seen, than just what I'm saying?
Apologies then for the flippancy then, Craig. I understand where you're coming from. What I mean is the infrastructure is there in so much as they have the camera, they have a crew there doing commentary already. You know, Sheffield have their super slow-mo camera that every single shot is done in super slow-mo. Even Stephen Murphy walking slowly Baywatch style out of the dressing rooms on Saturday night, in my opinion, those two clubs probably have the infrastructure there to do a production of sorts. If Cardiff can do it with one man on a makeshift scaffold and somebody on a sofa out of your front room, you know, Sheffield and Nottingham can do it.
I agree with you, Paddy. I think it is a misunderstanding on Nottingham and Sheffield's part, because you know yourself, if you guys were over in Belfast like I am, you know, we're diehard fans. If the Giants are playing at home, we're going to go to that game. Where, you know, even though the webcast is available to us, you know, the people who actually purchase a webcast are fans of the sport. But like, you can be rest assured, any Belfast fan who actually purchases the webcast is purchasing it because maybe they're sick. They can't, maybe the wife's going out in a Christmas party and there's no childminder, so they have to, you know. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, if you're
or the away fans that actually can't afford to make it over, but they're still going. They may not be able to afford to come over, but they're still going to pay £8 for a webcast. So that's basically £8 coming in that wasn't coming in, or as opposed to nothing, because these guys weren't going to travel initially.
Well, I would say, like, I know we don't want to protract this out too long, but I would say if Nottingham did a webcast for the Belfast Giants games, I would say we would have easily 300-400 people would purchase that from Belfast. I honestly believe that. You know, there's whatever it is, £2,500, there's a day's wages for Cornelison.
Just on a quick side note as well, I know this is a side note, but the one real frustration to me is the total. You mentioned the highlights package being put out by Giants Live TV, and those guys have it out. Bingo, you know, it's out within hours, and people can see the highlights, and it's a brilliant package that they have, and they've got interviews being done. Sometimes interviews are a bit dodgy, but they've interviews being done.
UTV.
Exactly. The interviews are done, and it's there, and it's exactly what the fans want to see. Now, you flip that around to some of the other teams, and it's just not forthcoming. There's some teams don't bring them. Like, I tried to put together on Tuesday or Wednesday a page on Kingdom of the Giants to give a highlights of across the Elite League, and try to put every available highlights package that I could find out there. Now, by Tuesday morning, this morning, only Coventry and Hull had produced them. The Sheffield ones came from BBC Northern Ireland. The Sheffield ones came out later today. So this is Tuesday afternoon. There was nothing from Edinburgh or Dundee. Dundee might usually comes out eventually. But some of them would, like Cardiff, just take like most of the week. Surely production of highlights packages should be a means of promotion. You know, get them out there, get them, so this is how our game ended. Okay, we lost. Like Sheffield, when they win, the highlights are out there straight away. When they lose, it takes about 2-3 days.
You've got it right in the head there, Paddy. It's the fickleness of results as well. You can be sure this weekend, if Sheffield turn Nottingham over on Saturday night, before you get your crunchy nut cornflakes in the bowl on Sunday morning, Dave Sims will have that cut together. Absolutely for certain. I agree with you 100%. Cardiff the other week didn't have him out on Thursday and put something out on Twitter. We've been busy this week because we've got a game this weekend. You know, shouldn't be excuses like that. You know, we're supposed to be a professional league. You've got the highlights there. You've got the game tape on a Saturday night. Get them cut together right for Monday morning.
Prioritise it. Yeah, prioritise it because it is a main promotional point.
Well, my point on it is this, and it was something the Killer actually said up in the commentary box, one of the very first games of this season, and he said this organisation is a shirt and tie organisation. It's a professional organisation. And, you know, as I've said, the level of commitment, dedication by all of the staff, both in Giants Live and both within the organisation, to producing as professional an outfit as we possibly can and kind of standing out from the crowd. And, you know, all the people who are involved, nobody sees their job, from what I've gleaned anyway, nobody sees their job as a job. It's almost as if they're getting paid for their hobbies and their passions. And, you know, people like James Glover, Brooksy, Killer, all these guys, they're hockey nuts. They love the sport. I remember Brooksy standing, you know, behind the bench for years with a towel and filling up the water bottles for the boys. You know, he absolutely loves ice hockey, and everyone involved, Dave Laurie, Ronan, all the guys at Giants Live, they're all passionate about their hockey and enjoy watching the game. And I think it's a commitment to excellence, and I think that's what makes us stand apart from all the rest, in my humble opinion.
I agree with you, and that was a side note to a side note to a side note, so let's get back on track. After that win against the Hull Stingrays, we moved on just down the road to Sheffield, to the Motor Point Arena, to take on the Sheffield Steelers. And the last game we took against the Steelers, it was a tight game where we lost on a puck ricocheting off a skate and into the back of the net for the Steelers to take the victory. But this time, the Belfast Giants were more dominant on a 4-2 win.
What a victory. You know, I had a good feeling. I think I said in last week's podcast, I had a really good feeling that we're going to get the 2 points from this. I just feel that we've got a real momentum about us at the minute, but we've got a real fighting character, and, you know, epitomised by the, you know, in my opinion, our X-Factor player in Jeffrey Swayze, and, you know, his set-up play for that Colin Shields goal, fighting off the defender who was hacking and slashing at him. He was one-handed, managed to get the puck back into the lane for Colin Shields to rifle one into the top corner. You know, I think Dustin White caught him as well, his goal where he drove to the net. I was watching the replay, I watched it 3 or 4 times, the replay for White Cotton's goal, how hard he drives in it. You know, this is a team full of character and commitment to the cause. And as I've said earlier on the podcast, you know, it's a road warrior type team. Those guys that don't know when to let up.
Paddy, you were at the game yourself. Sheffield seemed to be a bit of 6 and 7. Don't seem to be very consistent at the minute. Is that something that you noticed?
Very much so. You could see, like, and the interview I did with Doug Christians afterwards, he sort of agreed that the consistency isn't there because they haven't been able to get that consistent amount of, you know, that consistent form on the ice, that a unit of players that are able to put out time and time again. Their power play units are changing, their penalty kills units are changing time on time again. They're chopping and changing the lines because, okay, they're having maybe the personnel isn't fitting in, or the lines aren't gelling together, and also they're bringing in new imports, and some guys are going, and it's very and that's why that they're what's the word? They're consistent by their inconsistency. They had a good win in Coventry, but brought it back to Belfast and brought it back home to play Belfast. And that first period, Belfast were absolutely dominant. It could have been 4 or 5. You know, and I agree with Coach. Jeff Swayze, by far, him and Whitecotton were the two best players on the ice. Now, the Man of the Match award went to Stephen Murphy, who had a great game, no harm to him. You know, he's been playing really, really well. I think that was a political decision by the Sheffield Steelers to try to point out that, you know, they had a good game and, you know, a netminder stopped them from getting any closer, which isn't the case. The Man of the Match award should have went to either Swayze or Whitecotton, because that line with Shields has finally started to hit top form. We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, where the second line were really stepping up and being at the forefront for the Belfast Giants. Now, this weekend especially, Shields, Whitecotton, Swayze, they were causing untold problems to the Sheffield Steelers on Sunday night. And you just have to look at the fact that all three of them scored. I will point out that goal against Shields was an absolute cracker, both by Suez and by Shields. For Suez to take the puck from Phillips on the blue line, drive the net with the puck, one hand on the stick, one hand on the defenseman, and then pick out a wide open Colin Shields, who absolutely nearly ripped the net off with what was came off the post. It was absolute beaut of a shot. This is the sniper that we were talking about weeks ago. This is the Colin Shields that we knew would be able to play, but just maybe we didn't feel was performing. He is performing now. This is the Colin Shields that we want to see week in, week out. And that in that game, you know, the superlatives of how that first line were playing are untold. Defensively, we're as strong as any team in the league, if not stronger. Davey, you're the stats man. I'm sure if you had a look, you'd see that. I'd say goals per game conceded, we're probably the best in the league, because the likes of Brookwell and Elfring are absolutely fantastic. Sandrock and Mason are playing really well, and we spoke about the Phillips brothers again. They haven't really put a foot wrong, and then Murphy at the back's been like a brick wall. Very, very impressive by the Belfast Giants at the weekend, and it was really, really good to see.
Talking there about Sheffield and Doug, and I know you had a good chat with Doug afterwards, but something that has been all too apparent this season with Sheffield is their inconsistency on D, and that's something that we know from Belfast, that Doug has always prided himself, you know, defence first, you know, stop the puck going in, and, you know, we'll take our chances at the other end. What's going on there with their D?
I don't know, Coach. I have to say, I wasn't impressed. We scored two early power play goals. Their penalty kill unit wasn't doing very well. They were leaving massive gaps at the back. And there were Doyle's being hung out to dry. Now, you look at two of those goals that we scored were more or less right in the face of Frank Doyle. You know, and it seemed to be, when you look at them, there's maybe two or three Belfast Giants that are just trying to put the puck away to about maybe one or two of the Sheffield Steelers. There's nobody digging in to try to help Doyle out and clear that crease. So, obviously, Belfast are going to be dominant in that respect because they've got the guys in front of goal, they've got the sticks on the puck. They're really testing out Frank Doyle, who, for me, didn't impress me at all on Sunday. Some of the incidents and some of the goals he'll definitely want back, especially considering how close in and how many gaps he left. At one point, it was put right through his five hole and hit the post, I think. It was, you know, he wasn't impressive at all, but... Yeah, they really need to. They have had injuries. Chad Langley was very good for them, actually. Defensively, top player. We know that from his time in Belfast. But defensively, they've been very short. They have had their injuries. Danny Myers is back, pretty anonymous on Sunday night. But I don't know
Sorry, Paddy. The other elephant in the room, which I know you commented on it again on Sunday night, is and it's something that we are all too familiar of over the last couple of years. Sheffield's power play appears to be abysmal at present, and I believe some of the Sheffield crowd were booing it at one stage.
Well, I got dog's abuse for that on from some things on Twitter and on my personal Twitter account regards to even mentioning it, but saying it to him that I was lying. I was not lying. There was an absolutely one or two of their power plays were absolutely horrendous, where they couldn't get a shot on goal. They were basically passing it around. The Belfast Giants penalty kill unit was tight, and they had that box. You know, they did get the power play goal at the end, and I know we've talked at length on text about this, so I don't know whether Davey's going to bring it up or not. However, the Giants power play unit on the whole was pretty tight, but then the power play unit for the Sheffield Steelers, there's nothing to write home about, to be honest with you, because
that seems to be almost symptomatic of Doug's coaching. And this guy, you know, we used to see it in the summertime, you know, Doug's in Boston at the NHL draft. He's off to do a power play session with, you know, NHL coach, this NHL coach. And then all of a sudden, like, it just seems to be, you know, last year it was just get the puck to Sandrock, get it to Sandrock. Whereas now we have so much fluidity in our power play. Like, how can one coach make such a difference? What does Doug do that or sorry, what does Doug Knott do that, say, the likes of Eddie does or Corey Nielsen with his team? What's the difference here?
One of the things that really confuses me about it is that they've got some great guys who can strike the puck in that club. You've got Robert Dowd. We know how good Robert Dowd is as a player and how well he strikes the puck. Jeff LeCroix got his goal there. They've got some really, really good players there. However, they seem to be passing it back and forward, and you can watch it on the highlights. You can spot it as well. Passing it back and forward, and they don't seem to want to shoot unless they've got a clear side of goal. Now, that's not how it works. If you put the puck on goal in any situation, good things happen. We see that from their own goal. From Jeff LeCroix was a shot where LeCroix had a clear side of goal. It just happened to strike a loose stick. You know, however, it's when you put their other power play, they seem to be just searching for that perfect side of net before they even strike the puck. Whereas you look at Robbie Sandrock's goal, you look at that wasn't a power play, and he didn't have a clear side of goal. He just struck it. I'd love to see the slow mo of that, by the way, because I definitely heard it strike a stick on its way through. I'm not trying to take the credit for the goal away from Robbie Sandrock. We know what great slap shot he has. I was just pretty sure, and a few of us around it, it struck a stick. But yeah, the power play just seems to want to have this perfect, you know, this perfect finish. It's like Arsenal. Do you remember when they used to say about Arsenal that they wanted just to pass the ball into the back of the net and not take the dirty shots? That's what Sheffield seem to be doing, and it's just not working for them.
Well, it was something that we talked about over the last couple of seasons was the amount of cycling on our power play. And people were like, I was one of them shouting from the stand, shit the puck.
Yeah.
You know, because as you say, you put the puck on goal, good things happen. You know, goaltenders cough the puck up, boys following in. You know, it seemed to be a very strange thing with Sheffield, and seems to be maybe in some ways symptomatic of Doug's power play unit.
But don't let this take away from the fact of how good Belfast were. You know, the forecheck was phenomenal. Really right in the face of the Sheffield Steelers, really causing problems for them. On the second line, there was a bit of a switching up between Higgins and Peacock, and Peacock was playing third line at times. There seems to be a bit of a thing going on there, lads. I don't know where it's worth.
Yeah.
We'll see how that pans out, because the interview with Paul Eddy, which people can see on soundcloud.com/AVFTB, where I spoke to him after the game, I mentioned the fact that I saw Peacock on the second line, then he vanished. And he seemed to have a bit of a chat about, yeah, we're trying to find ice time for him. We're trying to find time to put him out there. Now, this is Craig Peacock. You know,
it's difficult, Paddy. It's always going to be difficult for Craig Peacock to come back into what was essentially a pretty settled team with all three lines firing pretty well. Like, our top line, you know, of Suez, Shield and White Cotton playing pretty well. The second line were absolutely on fire when Peacock came back. And our third line, you can't really change up. Mark Garside on Saturday night against Hull was outstanding. And you've got Keith and Lloyd, you know. Actually find somewhere for Craig Peacock to play there. You're gassing somebody else. And, you know, out of those other nine skaters, I'm just not sure at the minute. Craig Peacock is a fantastic player, and he would grace any team in this league, but it's just finding a slot for him coming in when you've already got nine guys that are in ahead of him.
And that's a great situation for the Belfast Giants to have, don't get me wrong. I think it's, you know, if they have a player like that who is struggling for ice time, shows how good the other lines are. You just seem to start to worry because why did Peacock leave Denmark? He wasn't getting the ice time that he thought he deserved to play with, so it's keeping a player like that happy with the ice time he's getting. And, you know, okay, he's come back to Belfast with, you know, with great intentions, and he's happy here, he wouldn't have come here if he wasn't. But then as the season goes on, do you think if Craig Peacock doesn't get the on ice time and the playing time that he craves, then he'll start to think, you know what, I might be looking elsewhere come next season?
It's sort of the nature of the sport is, you know, the nature of the game is we're going to pick up suspensions, we're going to pick up injuries, and he will get ice time. You know, we've been incredibly fortunate this season. If he was playing in Sheffield with the injury situation they've had, you know, he'd be in the game every week. Nottingham, the same. A lot of teams have picked up injuries. This for whatever reason, this season, we've been very, very fortunate with... don't know how many man games we've lost injury, but it's been very few. So Craig's just going to have to be patient, and you know, when he's getting ice time from it, he really, really make it count. And, you know, cream always rises to the top. The guy's quality, he will get in there.
I think the thing with that is, as Davey quite rightly says, is a patience thing, and a true pro will be disappointed, and a true pro may well go and rap the coach's door and have a one-to-one. But I would imagine the likes of Craig Peacock to be a good professional in the dressing room, and there's nothing worse than a guy who's maybe not getting the ice time that he maybe feels he deserves. And do you know what? He probably does in a lot of ways deserve, you know. I'm not sure of his overall points production since he's come back, but he's certainly done pretty well for the ice time that he's had. And, you know, I would imagine Craig Peacock to be a very popular type guy in that dressing room. And as Davey said, there will be opportunities that'll spring up throughout the course of the season. And you know what? Listen, that puts pressure on people like Chevrolet and Higgins on that second line to keep performing the way they're doing. And that puts pressure on all the guys because, listen, let's not forget, Peacock went off to the Danish league, which, you know, is a superior league to the one that we play in. And, you know, he started off pretty well there. And then, as he said in his interview, he lost ice time for whatever reason. And he found that perplexing. And that's obviously the reason why he ended up coming back. But, you know, it probably helps us from a staying point of view in Belfast, that his long-term girlfriend's from here as well.
Always the way.
The point that coach makes there is a very, very good point, that, you know, it keeps every player on the roster honest, because for too long in this league, you're not able to replace players. If players are playing bad, they just have to get through it, because the club, you know, for a start, you can't get rid of them for 2 weeks, and then you've got flights, and you've got new accommodation, you've new people to bring in, you've ITC cards to get. You know, it's just not as easy as it might be in North America, where you're gassed, you're a Whale of Minors, we're calling somebody else up. We have now got a situation where we've got a high, high-end quality player sitting, waiting in the wings, keeping everybody on their toes. You can bet practice now is done at game pace. You know, everyone there is smashing everything here because they want to be in the top nine. And with Craig Peacock kind of sitting number 10, Gareth Roberts, you know, even those guys, Gareth Roberts sitting there as 10 and 11, you know, they are putting pressure on the third-line players for more ice time and the second-line players for more ice time. It's just that it can only be a good thing, and hopefully Craig will stay patient and stay with us.
Momentum-wise, guys, that's four from four in the start of this road trip, and it's not going to be an easy road trip, considering we've got two games in Scotland. We've got the Nottingham Panthers involved in this road trip. We've got a doubleheader in Coventry. The momentum coach is really with the Belfast Giants at the moment.
Definitely, Paddy, and I said that at the top of the podcast. We're playing very, very well, and we've just got a momentum about us, a bit of a spark, and you know, I just like us when we go on the road. I just think that we have a fantastic commitment, and I think, again, the likes of Keith and Lloyd, a lot of these returning type players who have been round the circuit now, so to speak, and I know what it's like to travel with the Belfast Giants. You know, these guys were labelled the Road Warriors a couple of seasons ago, and I think that tag has just stuck with them. And you know, I always like Kiefer's tag whenever he talks about going into Fife and Dundee and Edinburgh. You know, you've got to stick your working boots on going into those types of arenas, and that's the best. That's, you know, a pretty clear analogy. You know, these places, that's where you have to really, yeah, I don't know, those are types of games maybe like your Chris Higgins and, you know, Kenny, your sexy type players maybe don't really stand out, whereas in those types of Barnes, Keith, Lloyd, Suez, guys who are up in your face, Big Brookwell, you know, guys like that there on the road are just, they're fantastic. And, you know, we've got a real momentum about us, Paddy, and, you know, listen, see if we have a good month here on the road, it sets us up very, very nicely for the rest of the season.
One player there that we've touched on earlier in the Sheffield or the Hull game that Coach didn't mention there, Stephen Murphy, who has been outstanding from the start of the season, but, you know, in this last... Yeah. 3-4 weeks has really, really came to the front of the game. And especially when you're on a 7 or 8 away swing, game away swing, you know, you need your goalie, especially at this level where you don't really have the luxury of, you know, dropping a different goalie in on the second night. Or, you know, talking about it earlier on, you asked me for some stats, you know, Stephen, and we'll compare coach's favourite, Kowalski, against Murphy. Kowalski has faced 400 shots and let 36 goals in. Murphy's faced 500 shots and let 38 goals in. Murphy is playing, you know, 2.1 goals a game the Giants are letting in here. You know, the Giants are playing really, really well, and it's led from the back. We talked about it earlier on. You know, forwards win games, but defences win championships. Stephen Murphy has started the season like a championship-winning goaltender.
Agreed. I thought, you look at that game, the highlights package obviously doesn't show it, but at one point Stephen Murphy was faced with a cracking but a low shot from Robert Dowd, which brought off a stunning kick save to basically keep the Belfast Giants. I think at that point it would have pulled it back to maybe a one goal game, but it was a brilliant kick save from Stephen Murphy, and he got man of the match. Again, I said maybe I thought it would have went to Whitecott or Suez, but he got man of the match, and he's been playing absolutely brilliantly for the Giants thus far. Just to round it all off, lads, it was a 4-2 win. As I said, goals for Suez, Sandrock, Shields and Whitecotton. And for Sheffield, the goals for Goetzen and Le Guy. Shall we move on?
Sure.
Sure. Then we'll move on. Coach will be happy with that. because Coach, we come to something that you did a couple of weeks ago with the game against the Cardiff Devils beforehand. You got to speak with referee Tom Darnell about his opinions on refereeing and all topics regards to the Elite League.
Delighted to say, join pre-game before the Cardiff Devils doubleheader weekend with who I regard as the number one referee in the Elite League at present, Tom Darnell. Tom, you're very welcome on the A View from the Bridge podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Tom, just to kick off, first question, how did you get involved in hockey? Where did it all start from? You know, did you start skating at an early age and led on to ice hockey? How did it all begin?
Well, it all started with the Milton Keynes Kings. So that's where my family are from.
Okay.
That's where my brother and I grew up. And one day we went to a hockey match and we got hooked. I think we were the age of nine and ten, my brother and I. And we became fans of hockey immediately. Started skating very soon after that. Then started playing junior hockey, and it just went from there, really. So, unfortunately, I think 10, 11 is a little bit too late, really, to become a professional player as such. My brother played up to the second tier, the old BNL. For me, I wasn't quite there and decided to flip to officiating at the age of about 17. And I've been refereeing since the 96-97 season in the EPL, then jumped up to the BNL and then the old Super League, and it went from there, really. So
One of my memories would be of you and Hixie back at the famous Nottingham Panthers Belfast Giants brawl, stuck in the middle of that. That must be very difficult for a linesman.
It's funny because I watched that video the other day when it was tweeted on, and it's good to kind of look back on times when Hixie and I were working together as a pair of linesmen, yeah. And we were over here quite frequently, and now we've obviously both moved into the capacity of refereeing. I look at a kind of skinnier, younger me and trying to control this situation that was a crazy situation. And we had some big players in the league that year. And I think, we're starting to see some bigger players come into the league again. So it certainly reminds me of those days of being a linesman, having to get in between things like that.
Certainly, you talk about the physical aspect of the game, and it's something that has been a real hot topic, really, I suppose, over the last couple of weeks on Twitter. And there's been a few examples to do with maybe linesman interference. And certainly from a fan's perspective, there is the odd occasion where you're thinking, just let them go. Two guys have dropped the gloves fair and square. I suppose the question is there a remit from the Elite League in any way to or from Maurie Hansen, your boss here, to kind of say, listen, let's stamp down in the fighting? Or is it just a linesman's personal choice to actually intervene?
I think the first thing to say is it's very hard sometimes for the spectators to know exactly what's happening on the ice. Conversations are taking place on the ice between players. A player might be injured and another player is still trying to fight them, in which case linesmen and the officiating team are picking up on things like that and maybe intervene in a situation where, from a spectator's point of view, they want to see a fight. So that's very much something that takes awareness and an understanding of different player situations. I think when there's situations that are near the boards or near the benches, you'll see the linesmen go in and separate that fight. Whereas if that was in the centre of the ice, where there's a bit more space and a bit more a lower chance that someone's going to get hurt in that situation, they would let them fight. So it's a complex situation, and it's something that we work as a team on the ice. If two willing combatants are there and want to fight, you will generally see the linesman let that happen. And that's what everybody wants to see. That's part of hockey, and certainly part of hockey in the Elite League. And we don't want to, intervene in the situation until the moment comes when a guy says, you know, I'm done, or they drop to the ice, or a guy gets hurt. That's the point where the linesman will step in, and they really have to put their safety on the line sometimes to intervene in something like that. And we've had situations where officials have got hit, but that's because they're doing their job. And, you know, by and large, they do that job effectively. And, you know, I would always support them in the way that they would intervene in a fight like that.
And certainly with regards to the training, you know, you guys, in my opinion, cop a lot of unfair abuse, whether it be on Twitter, whether it be on other social networking sites. With regards to your actual training, do you guys head across to, you know, Europe during the summertime to do extensive training? Or, you know, what systems are in place to kind of help the league professionalism with the referees improve?
I think it's something that if we had more resources in the league, I think it's something that everybody would say, you know, is something that they would want to invest a little bit more in. I think, you know, we would want that. I'm sure the teams would want that. But you've got Maury Hansen on board now, which is a great thing, his experience in the league. And then, you know, you've got experienced guys as well that work the league, that we're helping each other all the time. Some of us have been over to development camps in other countries. Hixie and I went across to Denmark at the start of the year. And, you know, we want those opportunities. You've got a lot of officials also that go away to double IHF tournaments. I think we've got 11 or 12 going away this year, which is a fantastic achievement for a country like Great Britain. And you learn so much there through working with the other officials, working with the supervisors that are former top officials themselves. So, you know, we look for those opportunities. I think, you know, if the league had more resources to throw at it, then, you know, I don't think anybody would question that that's something that we would want and that they would want to do. But we're not in that situation, unfortunately.
As I was saying, you know, there's obviously, you know, if you make a call out in the ice, you know, you have maybe 5,000-6,000 people on top of your back. Does that affect your influence in any way, or does it annoy you whenever people are jumping over the plexi at you and screaming and shouting, calling you all the names of the day? You know, again, I follow you on Twitter and see some of the abuse that you and other officials take. You know, I think you handle it very well, but maybe, you know, other referees maybe who are on the likes of social networking sites maybe wouldn't be able to handle it as well. You know, is that a difficult thing for a referee to take? Because at the end of the day, this is a part-time job for you. It's, you know, you have your own career, etc.
For me, it's always been something that I've either ignored or actually don't know about. During the game, you're in the game. And I think, again, you know, you don't really hear a lot of what's going on from the spectator's point of view. Of course, you feel the atmosphere. It's great to step out on the ice and it be, you know, a full arena. We love that as well as the players and as well as the spectators. You get a sense for excitement in the game, but specific comments and things that are directed potentially at us, you don't really hear those things. Of course, you know, I open myself up, as do others, on Twitter. I think it's important that we have an open form of communication. I will never engage in a debate about a call. Do we get it right every single time? No, we don't. I think we would admit that, and we get it right most of the time. And I think, you know, there are certain points in a game where, you know, they're focal points and there's controversy because one team maybe gets, you know, the better side of a decision. But that's hockey. Like, hockey is the hardest sport to officiate, in my opinion, and I'm biased about that. But you got a rubber puck flying around 100 miles an hour and you got, you know, six guys on each team that are throwing their body around. And, you know, the other thing is many other leagues have moved to the four-man system. We're still operating the three-man system. So with the speed of the game and the physicality now, you know, that's something that, you know, we're a step behind on. But that's, again, just because of the nature of the resources in the league. I tend to ignore the abuse, if you want to call it that. Fans pay their money. They're entitled to their opinion. But I'm out there to do a job, not to make friends.
You've articulated that very well. Let's just go on finally to your new initiative for the month of November and the whole Movember, and again your social networking with the whole Atmo officials. Just talk us through that for any fans who maybe aren't aware of it at present.
Yeah, so we really took inspiration from the Canadian original Mo officials, and I think last year they raised $75,000 for Movember. So, you know, a really great cause that a lot of us are, you know, feel very passionate about. Everybody feels passionate about, not just the officials, but everyone in their walk in life have got a story about someone that's been affected by cancer and other health issues that affect men, particularly like depression, diabetes, these sorts of things. So everybody's got that story. So we wanted to take inspiration from them, do the same thing over here. As of today, I just checked in, we've raised over over 100, over 500 pounds already for the cause. So and we're only on day two. So you'll see us wearing the special jerseys through the month. You can follow us on Twitter at Mofficials UK. We've got competitions running every week for people to win some great prizes as well. So, you know, again, it's just a way for us to do something a little bit different, come together as a team. It's kind of difficult because there's only three of us at every game. So this is for something for the 30 or so guys in the league to come together as a team. And, you know, it's not so easy to see the guys up in Scotland if we're down south. But, you know, this is something that we can really work on together, and we're having a good time doing it as well.
Fantastic. And just definitely, finally, I think every fan in the league who follows you on Twitter would like to know, what the hell is your job? Because you check in, you check into every airport business class around the world. What is Tom Darnell's main livelihood?
I don't actually fully know what my job is. It changes fairly frequently. I work for Hibu, which used to be called Yellow Pages. And really, we're about providing solutions for small businesses. We're a global company in the US, Spain, South America, and obviously the UK. And, you know, my job is about taking products to market that small businesses are going to be able to improve their businesses through things like websites, search marketing, and the latest one, loyalty. So it's varied, it's interesting. And I always say to my boss, the least stressful part of my week is actually stepping out on the ice in front of 5,000 people in Belfast.
Tom, thanks a million for talking to us again.
No,
thank you very much.
And thanks to Tom Darnell. Another great interview, Coach, but with a bit of a different twist to it. Darnell is one of the top referees in this league, isn't he?
He is indeed, yeah. No question about that. And, you know, he's a gentleman as well to speak to, and very kindly offered up his time there before that game. And, you know, it was interesting just to hear what he had to say. You know, I think, you know, Tom's very articulate in the way in which he speaks about the game and speaks about, you know, certain things that I suppose I maybe challenged them on, especially maybe to do with the referee stroke linesman interference and things like fights, which I think has been a real theme over the last two or three seasons. And it was interesting just to hear Tom's thoughts as well. My own opinion is that I do think that they do jump in still too quickly on certain things. You know, I keep on harping back to the Davy Phillips, Tristan Harper incident up at Brayhead a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, those two guys dropped the gloves fair and square, want to go, and, you know, inside a punch, the referee and linesman are on top of them. And, you know, it's a frustration. I actually saw a fight the other night in the NHL. I'm trying to remember who it was. It might have actually been...
Sestito against Orr?
Yeah, and was it those two, or it was one of the Boston? Oh, I can't remember, Paddy. It's gone out of my head who it was. But, like, they interlocked, they threw a few punches, and then they kind of got tangled up. They stepped back, and the linesmen were about to step in, but they stepped back and squared back off again, and the referee and linesmen all backed off because they hadn't finished their fight. And that has just always been a frustration of mine on that physical side of things, that sometimes I just think things... I think the refs just and linesmen just interject far too quickly.
Davey, we spoke last week about the games against Cardiff and about the difference in the standard of the referee in both games. Darnell did the first one, which we thought was very well done. Hicks did the second, which we thought was far from well done. We hear that Tom Darnell saying that both he and Hicksie were in, I think it was Denmark, he said, with regards to getting some experience over there. And I know they refereed a couple of games over there. Do you feel that in certain aspects that refereeing is, as the league is improving, the refereeing isn't improving parallel to that?
We're kind of at a stage where, you know, Tom Darnell and like him or not, Mike Hicks in behind him, you know, are our top tier refs, and what's perhaps coming in behind him has to gain experience to get to their level. You know, these guys, you know, mostly young guys who are coming through the ranks as linesmen turning into referees, and which is where Tom and Mike came from years ago. You know, I think it's a case of they've got to learn the game. They've got to, you know, for me, and I'm not trying, it's very, very hard to just come on and just criticise straight away. Mike Hicks had a poor game. The referee the game so differently. Mike Hicks, you know, referees, bang, you're in the penalty box, and then the next thing, it's an even up call. And it's just the last game that he refereed in Belfast, the game, you know, coach had friends, brought people to the game for the first time. They're just like, this is terrible to watch, because the game was just stop, stop, stop. Whereas the night before, if he'd had the same people at the game, they'd been going, this is fantastic. Tom Darnell is able to just have that bit better rapport perhaps with the players, where he can let certain things go. The players know once they cross that line they're in the box, but you know, he lets the game flow more, and it's just makes for a more natural game. Players know where they stand, whereas, you know, Hixey, God love him, just isn't just the same standard refereeing. And has the standard fallen? I don't believe it has, to be honest, no.
Coach, I think one of the aspects of the elite league are trying to bring in is good leadership and development. It's like that they've brought in Maury Hansen to replace Simon Kirkham as regards to the head of discipline. And Maury Hansen's been very visible at rinks up and down the country, coming in to assess the refereeing standards. I think that's a very important part of it, isn't it?
Couldn't agree more. And he was actually, he spent the two Cardiff Devils games that we had the doubleheader at home up in the commentary box, and he watched every single play, especially on the Sunday, as the day Hixey was refereeing, and you know, he was watching absolutely every second of that game very, very intently. And you know, I don't know the guy personally, but he comes across as quite a affable type person away from the ring. But you know, he's got a bit of the eye of the tiger about him there as well. And I dare say, you know, he's fair with the referees and tries to develop them and tries to help them along the way. But you know, I still think that we as an elite league, and it was one of the questions I posed to Tom, was, you know, do the elite league do enough? Like, what type of training are you sent on during the summertime? What do you actually do to improve? Because I think the one thing that fans have to remember is Tom Clarnell's flying all over the world in his Monday to Friday job. You know, ice hockey refereeing is his pastime. You know, it might sound village in terms of, you know, we don't have full-time referees or whatever, but we just don't. The elite league can't afford that. You know, so these guys are giving up of their time, albeit of course they're getting paid, but I just wonder what level of training that these guys are actually getting. Because as Davey said, you know, one night you could have a fantastic free-flowing game of hockey like we did on the Saturday night when Tom was in charge, and on the Sunday night it can be, you know, players' frustrations boiling over, boys, you know, the penalty box filling up. It just stop start, you know. Fans that are coming in maybe only for their second game or their third game, or their, heaven forbid, their first game, just thinking, Jesus, this game's supposed to be fast and free-flowing. You know, the music's on the whole bloody night, you know, with interruptions. So it's a frustration, and I think it's something that the elite league really have to kind of invest in, to be honest with you.
Well, thanks to Tom Darnell for taking the time to chat to you, Coach. It was a fantastic interview, and hopefully we'll have him on again, maybe discuss further later on in the season. Davey, before we come to your Twitter questions, I'm going to have a quick scout around the league. This weekend, just not that much to talk about, really. First of all, Nottingham Panthers. I'll just ask your opinions on that. Nottingham Panthers with two losses in Scotland, against Fife and against Edinburgh. And it doesn't get it, to be honest, guys, it doesn't get any better for the Nottingham Panthers. They had an embarrassing loss tonight, 19-12 to the David Clark All-Stars. You know, it goes from bad to worse for the Nottingham Panthers. But
Hinson Son scored 13, I think.
Did he? 13? Yeah. But, Davey, I was shocked, I have to say. How do you think that's transpired? Do you think is it due to a short bench, Nottingham Panthers? Do you think there's an arrogance, or do you think that these teams up in Fife and Edinburgh and Dundee are just a little bit better than what we imagined?
You were shocked. I was delighted. you know, it's almost getting to that stage. You tell me, they get a couple of bad results against Sheffield. You know, two teams that really need a result this weekend. Coaches under pressure. Doug Christensen is bound to be feeling a bit of pressure here if Sheffield get beat, humped twice by Nottingham here at the weekend. You know, Corey Nielsen, he'll be getting tight around the gusset here, you know, on Saturday, at the weekend. Fans will be after his head here sooner or later. You know, it wasn't that long ago that Nottingham wanted rid of him. Now they've got a shirt in their rafters. I think that's going to be an embarrassing situation for all when he gets the boot down the road. But, you know, I hope that's coming sooner rather than later.
Coach,
I'll give a more objective view on that. Well, I've had it.
Well, what I was going to say is we spoke earlier in the season about Edinburgh and about how, you know, they're trying to get people in or whatever, and trying to actually start to develop a team that could challenge and be part of this elite league in a more competitive fashion. They came out and they went 4-0 up on the Nottingham Panthers. Is that as competitive as you want it to be?
I'm still going to maintain what I said to Jono on Sunday night. It's still an unacceptable result for Nottingham. I know they were short benched, but I'm sorry.
Edinburgh was shorter.
Yeah, well I couldn't even tell you. Even if Edinburgh had 17 players on their bench to Nottingham's 13 or 14, I still don't care, because I'm sorry. I put Belfast into this as well. Let me just say, I do think that the standard in the Gardner Conference has increased. Definitely has. But whenever you still put down a paper and equate, let's use the Panthers in this occasion, but you can put Belfast into this as well. You put Nottingham Panthers up against an Edinburgh Capitals team, I'm sorry, it's like Man United playing Burnley. I'm sorry. I don't mean that to sound really disrespectful. It probably does. People think that is disrespectful towards Edinburgh or whatever. But the difference in the wage, the budget that is spent on those players is just night and day in comparison to what Edinburgh Capitals spent. And probably still in relation to the Fife Flyers as well. What the Fife Flyers do have is an unreal support and an unreal atmosphere, which can get under a lot of players' skins. It can be, we have been there, it's an intimidating rink, and apparently Saturday night it was absolutely rocking. But I'm sorry, you cannot say that about the Murrayfield Ice rink. There's 400 or 500 people watching it. So there is,
How do you think the change in goaltender, just while Kowalski's out on paternity.
Apparently slightly injured as well.
I haven't looked into their goaltender in any great detail, but I guarantee you Cornelison hasn't brought in someone with no pedigree. You know, the guy has bet he has a AHL East Coast background in some way.
I'll give you a stat from Saturday night, Cody. Let 7 shots in off 16. Or he said, let 7 goals in off 16 shots.
That's crap.
That's rubbish. And the fact that
That was Sunday night, was it?
Sunday against Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I tell you what, you've got to take into account that this is an import replacement for an import goalie. They've went into the market to try to shore up between the pipes, because they knew that Kowalski was going to be out for some period of time. Now, you looked at what happened with Lacoste in Cardiff. Cardiff only had the resources to bring in Greg Blaze from Hull. The Nottingham Panthers have the resource to go out there and bring in a netminder that they feel is sufficient to do the job to replace Kowalski for a short period of time. And they let in 7 goals off 16 shots. Wow.
He let in 4 goals off 5 shots in the middle period.
Good Lord. That's abysmal.
It's absolutely abysmal, no question about it. But I'm sorry, I still maintain that the Nottingham Panthers / Belfast Giants / Sheffield Steelers, with the quality of player that they have available to them, should still be going to Fife, Edinburgh, Dundee and winning. The only team in the Gardner Conference, and please don't mistake it as an arrogance thing or whatever, but it's just facts. There are such a disparity between the two sets of playing staff.
They should be going there and winning. To a certain extent there, Coach, but I would say, you know, even the Edinburgh Capitals top line are high, high quality players. You know, Curtis Ling Weber, Marcus Zemberg, give me another couple there, Jan Safar, really top drawer players. They can get themselves out. If they can get Hydlowski,
would any of them get into Nottingham or Belfast first line?
Don't really need to get into the first line though, Coach, because that's resource.
Some of those players would be good players in Belfast. Yeah. Would be good players in Nottingham.
I'd take Curtis Lane Weber in a heartbeat.
I accept your point, Paddy. I know where you're going with it, and you're quite right, of course, sure. Just the way Davey said, they're top end players. Well, if they're that good, why are they playing for the Edinburgh Capitals?
Why is Jeremy Tender playing for Hull?
In my opinion, lack of ambition.
I don't know.
So could that not be said for Curtis Ling Weber? Could that not be said for Marcus Zemberg?
They're still a top player. They just don't have the ambition to go to a top team.
I haven't seen enough of Lean Weber. He's done well. What? I've seen enough of Taylor to definitely suggest that he could definitely play on a top line in any Belfast, Sheffield, or Nottingham team.
Why be? Why just on that point? Why be why be a third line player in Belfast when you can be a top line player in Hull and maybe command a bigger wage because of it? I think that's got to have something to do with it.
You know, fair comment whenever it comes down to money, yeah.
I think we're talking about the games ahead when we haven't even reached that point, boys. Come on. I think only one other point to make before we go on to Davey's Twitter questions. And that came out today, and I don't think anybody was shocked at this, Davey, at the news that Andrew Conboy has been released by the Cardiff Devils.
No, the Devils have already proved themselves this season to be very loyal, and then maybe not so much the next day. You know, they came out and says, we're going to stand by Andrew. He's our guy. You know, he'll sell 50-50 tickets for a few weeks, and then he'll be rehabilitated again after yet another suspension, and he'll be back in the lineup. But they've said now, you know, I think the statement's is a terrible indictment on something we've been talking about there, on the referee, and to say that he's now a marked man, to say that referees would be, you know, have him more under the microscope. Stop hitting referees. Stop eye gouging people. Stop headbutting people, and then you'll not be under the microscope. I think he's well. They've done well enough to get rid of him. They're under pressure with suspension, so it was no real surprise they got rid of him. More surprise that they made the statement last week instead of just saying last week, ta-da, mate, there's a door, off you go.
It was a bit of a strange statement, Coach, because if you read through, as Davey said, it seemed to point the finger not at Conboy, but at the league and at the refereeing. It's pretty ridiculous.
It's just, I don't know who the hell put, I have a fair idea who may well put those together, but like, surely somebody else has a read through them and kind of says, listen, yeah or nay to them, because, you know, it's just a plain ridiculous statement. And Davey's right, stop headbutting people, stop eye gouging people, you know, just stop the, you know, bashing in the referees and all the rest. You know, I'm sorry, I don't accept it, but I'm glad to see that he's eventually gone, but I think the Cardiff Devils should have sent him packing last week.
I think it'll be interesting to see now whether Cardiff have gone to the league and said, you know, if we gas this guy here, or have we still to sit for 11 games or 10 games, however many's left now? You know, there seems to be a bit of speculation in the ranks that they're going to try and do a bit of a Derek Campbell and get a bit of a percentage of what, you know, it was Conboy's ban, we've got rid of him, we've sacked him because of it, you know, come and play with an extra import now, you know, so it'd be interesting just to see over the next few days how that one pans out.
Yeah, there are extreme circumstances with regards to Derek Campbell, but I can understand the precedent being set there that they might actually approach the board and say, you know, fair's fair, we've gassed this guy. But yeah, I take your point, Davey. I think it's absolutely correct. Let's go on. Twitter questions, Davey. We did it last week. Let's do it again.
Okay, we Phil 56, Philip Armstrong. Where does Adam Keefe rank in the list of Giants captains? And is he one of the best pound for pound fighters, I suppose, ever in the EIHL?
I'm going to start with this one before, because I know the coach is going to go through the whole heartbeat of the squad stuff. So I'm going to say Adam Keefe is second only to Paul Cruz in both categories. Coach?
That's a good shout. I probably will agree with you on that. I was a huge fan of Jeremy Ribbick as captain. Kind of the elder statesman of the team, led the team immaculately throughout the course of the season. A mature guy, a top-end player, quality player at that, gained instant respect. Just he had a presence about him when he walked into a room. And that's what your captain should always have. You know, he was articulate in the way he spoke to the team, and you know, you could just tell he was a natural leader. I think Keith would naturally be the greatest talker in the dressing room. I don't think he's the type of guy that's going to be giving Churchillian type speeches in the dressing room before a match. But Adam Keefe to me is like a Martin Johnson in rugby terms. He leads from the front. He just goes out and does it, and you follow him. He's a fantastic leader of men. But Paul Cruz is a really good shout, man.
Davey, what's yours out of interest before we move on to the next one?
Captaincy, fighting wise, you know, pound for pound, yes, he's gone with the heavyweights, he's gone with the middleweights, and he's beat them all. You know, he's came up with a few losses over his time in the Elite League, but not very many. You know, he got a bit of a doing from your man in Edinburgh a couple of years ago, but you know, since then, you
who's
know,
that? He got a doing from Mike Egner last year. So he did.
Slattock, was it Joseph Slattock?
Slattock was, yeah.
Right?
So okay. Give him a bit of a, wasn't a terrible beating, like, but you know, Ryan Hand and him had a couple of tilts last year, went either way, and Mike Egner, obviously, there was a bit of blood spilt there. But, you know, pound for pound, yes, it would be easy to argue that he's as good as we have had. As far as captains go, you know, I've got a soft spot for him, Paddy. I find it very hard to look past George Iwata. The guy won the league, he's won the playoffs, he's won Challenge Cups, Knockout Cups, he's won a lot with the club. He played in every situation for us. You know, he was a power play specialist. He was a PK specialist, that guy on the penalty kill. We still haven't had anyone that worked like George Iwata in the penalty kill. And even strength, you know, that guy captained us for a lot of years, scored so many goals, won us so many trophies. So for me, captaincy-wise, Cruiser, great guy, but for me, George Iwata.
Good question.
Yes, good question, Phil. So thanks very much. Give Wee Phil 56 a follow if you're on Twitter. Second one, Newcastle and Peterborough legend David Clark having a testimonial tonight. And the question from Stephen Thompson at BFG14 is, who is the best Brit in the EIHL era? And just one answer is all you need, guys. Don't need to elaborate.
Coach, you go first.
Whoa, best Brit. I'm in a league era. Dave Longstaff was a fantastic player. He was Super League and a league. Like Longstaff, he was quality.
One name.
I'm going to say Robert Dowd, but I still think Robert Dowd has still a bit to prove. But he has really impressed me the last. I know he was away last year over in wherever he was, Sweden or Denmark or wherever it was.
That's well, okay.
I'm going to go Rob Dowd.
I'm going to be very, very surprised if Paddy doesn't agree with me. Go ahead, Paddy.
Well, see, I don't know, Joe, because I was going to say Dave Clark. I was actually going to say David Clark because I think David Clark, we're talking 10 seasons. He's had 10 seasons with Nottingham Panthers. He was in London. He was in London Knights before that. He was fantastic. Yeah, I was going to say, I actually am going to say David Clark.
Right.
Well, that's who, not, yeah. Who, I think, are you going to say Mark Morrison?
Yeah, that's a good shout as well. No, for me, I know he didn't play in the Elite League for that many years. You know, he only played.
You would say Tony Hand?
Tony Hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. He only played maybe four seasons in the Elite League, but, you know, for longevity in the game, for what he did before the Elite League started, for what he's done since. Even to be playing, you know, still at a pretty high level and producing.
But that's not the question, David.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, who do I think was the best Brit that's ever played in the Elite League? Yeah. I think it's Tony Hand.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, that's a different interpretation on the way I took that question. But anyway, the best Brit to ever play in British ice hockey is Tony Hand. That is unquestionable.
Who is the best Brit to ever play in the Elite League?
Was the question. You went down the lobby route as well, Coach. I was with you on that. You know what I mean? I can agree with Davey as regards to that. But then I'm still going to stick with you know, he had David Clark. He did have that one season in Italy, didn't he? As Todd Kelman pointed out earlier today on YouTube. But But another good question.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen that tribute video to David Clark, it's definitely worth it. I'm sure we'll tweet up the link again afterwards. Definitely worth a watch. A tweet now from our good friend Gary Jackson. Give him a follow as well, at Jack O'Gaz. $17.50 to get into Sheffield at the weekend. Is EIHL value for money?
This is a big, big question. At the minute, $17.50 is far too much for a game of hockey. But then you've got to put it in context with regards to what you're paying for other things. You know, I give a lot of stick to the Manchester Phoenix here because they charge more or less the same for EPL, which is absolutely ridiculous. They hit back by saying, when you look in the local vicinity, you've got so many Premier League football teams, lower league football teams, and that you're paying a lot more for it. They're not your market, to be honest. They're not who you're going up against. You keep your market to yourself. I think the $17.50. Which is what a lot of people paid on Sunday night to get into Sheffield, is far too much for a game of hockey at this moment in time, especially considering how tight things are.
Coach,
extortionate.
Is that it?
Yep, I think it's way too much. I really do.
The only,
and,
The only thing I would add, and sort of Paddy alluded to it there, is, you know, what you're competing against. And, you know, if I was to say in Bristol here, for example, you know, you're competing with Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, you know, League One, League Two type football, which is the, you know, lower tier football. It's well in excess of £20+ to get in to see that. You know, I'm not sure what, you know, what it costs to get into the cinema now, but, you know, for £17.50, I do think it's on the high side of costs, and they're certainly probably the most expensive in the Elite League. But you're getting, you know, 3 hours of you're getting a quality product. If it was Belfast, for example, you know, you're getting a quality product, you're getting a good night's entertainment there for £17.50. I think it is on the it is expensive, but I don't think that, you know, if you're paying maybe £14-15, it's not that bad. All right, well then, seeing there's nothing else to add, I'll move on. At Teal Giant 777, this is one that we'll go to coach with this one first. They brought in hybrid icing to the NHL this season, and it seems to be a good success. Would you think the EIHL should consider it?
Yes, player safety is important.
Yeah. I agree with Coach. Player safety is important. It can be a bit annoying at times. Remember, we've in the Elite League, we've actually went from touch icing, we've went back to, you know, just cross icing. The hybrid system is probably the better system to go by. But there's a lot of stuff in the NHL that isn't going to be adopted by the IIHF. You look at the way the NHL has also reduced the size of goalie pads to try to, as it was put on, I think, on ESPN, to try to sex the game up a bit, you know, try to bring in more goals and try to, I don't think we'll bring that in. But yeah, it's worth trying, isn't it?
I'm with you. I think it's worked really well. It hasn't detracted from the game. I don't think charging into somebody who generally will have their back to you because they're trying to play the puck to try and make a check. It's, you know, the responsibility now has to be on players not to make those hits. And just if that one rule change can take that out for a player, it's one less thing that somebody has to think about on the ice, is not making that check. Well, then, yeah, I'm with Coach. You know, player safety has to be, you know, right at the top of the list of priorities. And then, excuse me.
while you're recovering there, Davey, I will say that I'd like icing not to be called when the puck goes through the crease, which seems to be happening week in, week out in the Elite League.
Killer was on about this last weekend, so he was absolutely off in the raves, and he thought that it was a rule that shouldn't be called, and yet it is continually called.
Week in, week out in this league, the puck is shot on towards net, it goes through the crease, he gets touched up, and we take it down the far end. I'm sorry, am I reading a different, have I been following a different game for the last 15 years? Is it? I was pretty sure that that's not icing. And I might actually tweet up Tom Darnell and find out.
Let's tweet Tom afterwards, and we'll get an answer for the listeners. Then final question, and we'll ask you, and then we've asked our good friend Gary Jackson for his opinion as well. This is from Wilco 1962. Have Giants fans' opinions on Paul Eady changed this season, Coach?
Mine never really needed to be changed in a lot of ways. I remember that fateful night very, very well when the Panthers and the Giants went at it.
We mention it every week. Yes.
We do, absolutely. But Eady, for me, came in with a very much a clean slate at the start of the season. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of dealing with him quite a bit, like you have as well, Paddy, after games on the road. And I dealt with him a lot at the Odyssey. And an absolute gentleman, a very cool, calm, collected guy, both on and off the ice. You know, when he's on the bench, he's ultra calm. The way in which he speaks to the players, he never gets rattled at all. You never see him rattled. And he's the same down the tunnel before, during and after a game. And an absolute gentleman of a guy. And a bit like Doug, very very welcoming and very hospitable with regards to doing things like interviews. And, you know, I like what he's done with our team. I like the play. I know he already had a fairly pre-existing team to take on board whenever he arrived here. But, you know, he's brought in the likes of Calvin Elfring, Brookwell, Dustin White, Cotton into our team. And he's really improved. He's improved our team in the areas that we needed improved upon. And he's really, really impressed me.
Paddy?
I'd be very interested to hear Jacko's response as yourselves, as yourself, your own, Davey, because mine initially for Paul Eady was the the initial response is the heart within the head, isn't it? You think about Paulie. I remember that team, and you remember that night thing, and you think about that, who he was, and we haven't seen him in this league since. So obviously your thoughts and your feelings go right back to then, and you're back being that kid that was watching the game at that time, and you remember all the emotions around it. But then when the head starts to take over, you think to yourself, he's now one of the most experienced coaches in the league. You know, he's come in, and I remember saying it at the time when he was signed, you know, you're a bit, you know, and I think I wrote an article for Kingdom of Giants at the time, thinking, you know, you're a bit, your back's up a bit because you remember that, but when your experience of watching the game in the time since starts to think about it and starts to think about, you know, what Paul Eddy's done in Europe and what he'd be able to do with Belfast, then the head starts to take over and you start to think, you think a bit more rationally about the guy, and you think about how, you know, what experience he does bring and what he could do with the team. And that's been proven. I think we've got a great team on the ice. That you just have to look at the players that he's brought in, never mind the players that were there already. They're already a great unit. A lot of credit to Doug. Eddie's worked really well with the unit that were already there. But then you look at the players that he brought in. Brookwell, for me, the best player we have at the minute. Our number one player is Cody Brookwell. Whitecotton, our best forward at the minute. Stats don't lie. You look at Elfring, absolutely superb. You look at who else did he bring? Higgins, sick hands. You know, he's done a great job with Belfast, and long may it continue.
I suppose my tuppence worth on it then. Whenever it was first announced, obviously, that Paul Eddy was coming in, you know yourselves that I wasn't exactly, you know, doing star jumps about it. But I remember, Paddy, and we're very fortunate here in the podcast that we've been, the organisation have really, really ramped up their help to us this season. Yeah. And, you know, thanks very much to them for that. You know, Paddy was able to get an early interview with Paul Eddy. And one of the first questions he asked him was about, you know, what do you remember about that time? And he said, you know, I was, my team was probably too tough. And, you know, I took that as an apology. And, you know, I'm happy that he's realized that, you know, probably he should have done things differently that night. And he regrets what happens. And I think that he's been magnanimous enough to, you know, go on the record and put that down. So, you know, from that moment on, I said, you know, I said it last week, Cardiff fans have to accept Brad Pope. And for me, Paul Eddy a great chance. He's been a gentleman with me with the interviews that I've been doing with him, and you know, he's our coach now, and as I say, you know, he was good enough to put his hands up to what happened before, and I say, you know, that's the best. I think if Paddy can cut out coaches laughing, we should clip in what Jackal has to say on the subject here.
Have fans' opinions of Paul Eddy changed? Well, to put it simply, yes. Paul Eddy has impressed even the most vocal opposition to his appointment. And let's face it, that was me. His mild-mannered tone, almost to the point of a disinterest, in the post or pre-game interviews is a different tack to what we've been used to. Eddy appears to be a real thinker, his answers are well considered, and he doesn't give much away. For me, my objections to the appointment come from Eddy's time in Nottingham. We all know the date, 26th of October 2002. Never forgive, never forget. But beyond that, in the early years of the Elite League, Paul Eddy was still the coach of the Nottingham Panthers. But yet he couldn't challenge for any of the top trophies, winning just a single Challenge Cup in 2004. The Panthers didn't renew his contract at the end of that season, and he left Nottingham to embark on a coaching career in Europe, in leagues which have to be considered to be a better standard than our own, the Italian League and the Swiss second tier. And whilst he never won any of the top trophies in these leagues, he challenged every year. His return to the UK a better coach, and of that there was no doubt. But Paul Eddy needed to get off to a good start in his time with the Giants. The pressure was huge. A couple of poor results early doors, and people like myself would have been very quick to turn on him. But a good start is exactly what we've got this season. On the ice, the Giants lead the charge for a Monteith Bowl, with 25 points out of a possible 32 so far. And it's worth noting that all four of our defeats come from within the Earhart Conference, including a shootout loss to the Cardiff Devils. To me, this means that Eddy is succeeding in preventing any complacency that seems to come sometimes when the Big Three play the Gardner Conference teams, although we should note that we've only played four Gardner Conference teams in the league this year. Although most of the team was signed before Paul Eddy joined, the players that he did sign, Brookwell, Whitecotton and Higgins, have all been fantastic additions to an already decent team. Early injuries have forced Eddie to mix things around, and he appears willing to give the locals ice time in these scenarios, allowing our top two lines much needed bench time. The benchmark has been set by Eddie's predecessors. Dave Whistle, Ed Courtney, Steve Thornton, Big Doug, all won major trophies while serving the people of Belfast. The easiest way for Eddie to win fans over is to continue with this tradition. And if he keeps doing what he's done so far, come April I'm confident that there will be silverware in the cabinet of the Odyssey Arena, ensuring that the winning legacy set down by Jim Gillespie during his time as owner lives on in the new Giants era. I look forward to being wrong.
And thanks to all our listeners there for their tweets this week. You can get us again next week. If you have any questions, you know what to do.
Yep, at AVFTB, and usually it's on a podcast Tuesday when we're recording, so hashtag Davey's Questions. Guys, another long podcast. We need to wrap this up quickly by looking to the two games that are ahead this weekend. We are in Scotland, facing the same two teams that the Nottingham Panthers lost to last weekend. One league game, one cup game. The first one is Edinburgh. We've spoken at length about them earlier on, about what sort of team they have. If you listen to the interview that I had with Paul Eddy at the end of the Sheffield game last week, he did say that all his concentration is going into this game, and then he'll think about the Fife game, it being more or less a dead rubber cup game. He'll think about that later. Edinburgh are obviously going to be quite confident after the win against Nottingham, coach. But we really can't go in arrogant.
Oh, 100%. But, you know, that was my point earlier on about, you know, teams like Nottingham and Belfast and Sheffield, they should be demanding of themselves that they go into these rinks and pick up 2 points for what they hope will be league success at the come the end of March. And, you know, it's best epitomising our team, the road warrior element. And, you know, we've just got that buzz about us at the minute, Paddy. We're going in full strength. You know, we touched on the fact that Craig Peacock waiting in the wings. You know, likes of Edinburgh and Fife would be crying out to have likes of Craig Peacock sitting, you know, waiting to, you know, burst in and score a few goals and get, you know, get a prominent position on one of the top two lines and, you know, get a regular shift. And I just think that we're just going to have way too much for Edinburgh, or we certainly should have way too much for Edinburgh.
David?
Same as what Coach says, you know, we have to go in. We'll be going in fresh on Saturday night. Hopefully, Edinburgh going to be going in that game with a bit of confidence. You know, they've knocked 7 past the Panthers. That's not an easy thing to do for any team in this league. And, you know, Edinburgh had been on a long, long run of little success. And that's going to be a game that's going to take all our wits about us to win. Hopefully, you know, we'll go in there, we'll do the business. Sunday night, as you say, isn't really that important a game because, you know, it's a cup game. We've already gone a top back group. So, you know, Saturday night's the big game. Let's put all the energies into it this week and try and come out with another 2 points from Edinburgh.
Yeah, that league game, I think, is very, very important. And like you say, I said, you coach the Sunday night game, not so much. Do you think that we should be giving ice time to those players that maybe don't get as much?
Yes, I think those types of guys, like Robbie Brown, Gareth Roberts, Craig Peacock, guys who just haven't seen as much ice time will definitely get a lot more ice time. I think, you know, I mentioned this as well on a previous podcast, whenever you've got momentum and you've got guys playing well, don't screw it up too much. Don't mix it up for the sake of mixing it up, basically, is what I'm saying. And, you know, I think it's important that, you know, guys still get the regular shift and things like that. But I'm all for making sure Robbie Brown and Gareth Roberts and these guys are getting a fairly regular shift and getting a good workout. But, you know, the last thing you want to do is lose that momentum and maybe lose to Fife on the back of giving the third line or, you know, stroke fourth line, whatever you want to call it, a lot of ice time and kind of losing a wee bit of momentum. I think that's important that we still go in there to pick up that Challenge Cup victory.
In which case, I'll just have a look at the games with regards to coverage. I think the Edinburgh Capitals have had a webcast last week. It seems to be on and off of the Caps TV Live, but well worth checking out the Edinburgh Capitals official website with regards to whether you'll be able to view that game. And regards to the game in Fife, there will be no A View from the Bridge Twitter updates because I'm off to Germany. However, @hockey_Laura is the girl in Fife who does a lot of the Twitter commentary. She's very good, very neutral in regards to her approach. It's well worth following. That's @hockey_Laura. Guys, if there's nothing else, I'll bid
you
adieu.
Yes, there is.
Oh, more.
Of course, we never got well. What would show would be complete without an update on our Newfoundland team, the Gander Flyers?
Oh, the Gander Flyers.
You know, last weekend, I saw them open their home season. 3 points out of four. Our friend of the show, Patrick O'Brien, stepping in between the pipes after the Devon O'Brien went down injured and seeing them through to win. And Pete Campbell, ex-Giant Pete Campbell, opening his Gander account with 4 goals and 2 assists over the weekend. You know, he beasted the MPHJ Bartlett Electric Blades at the weekend there, you know, and this weekend the Gander Flyers go to the Windsor Cataracts for a doubleheader Saturday night 7:30, Sunday 1:30. You know, there'll be Twitter updates going on there. Give them a follow at Gander Flyers and wish Patrick and the rest of the team at Gander and Pete Campbell all the best for the doubleheader the weekend.
#UlsterFlyers.
Ulster Flyers.
Thanks, guys. And that's it. Very little more to say. We've had plenty to say as it is. Only to remind you of the various places you can go to get all sorts of content from us. That's www.soundcloud.com/AVFTB. That'll give you all the post-game interviews and whatnot. You can, of course, email us, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com, Twitter @AVFTB, and the website www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. Thanks again to Tom Darnell and to Gary Jacko Jackson for their input. Thanks to the guys, as always. Check out the Edinburgh Capitals website for any webcast on Saturday, and @hockey_Laura for the Twitter updates from Fife come Sunday. I'm off to Germany this weekend, Ost Berlin, and wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.